Welcome to the Teachers on Fire podcast, where I profile agents of growth and transformation in education today. Each guest shares their highs, their lows, their passions, their goals, and the resources that are shaping their thinking and inspiring their practice. For show notes and links from each episode, visit teachersonfire.net. You can also follow the show at Teachers on Fire on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And of course, please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Tim Cavey. Let's meet today's guest. Today, I'm speaking with Karen Caswell. Karen is a fourth grade teacher in Australia. She's an Apple certified teacher and Seesaw ambassador. Her favorite themes in education include relationships, reading, kindness, and of course, global connections. She's also the founder of TLAP Down Under. Follow Karen on Twitter at K. CASW1, that's KCASW1, and on her blog at same thing, kcasw1.wixsite.com/blog. Karen, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Are you ready to talk education all the way from Australia?
Hi, Tim. Yes, I am. Thanks so much for having me.
And I'm sure I'm saying Australia wrong, right? But it is my pleasure to have you here, Karen, and I'm excited to connect. You come with high reviews, and I've seen a lot of you on Twitter as well, so I'm excited to jump in. Karen, why don't you start by telling us what your teaching context looks like?
Okay, so I teach at a primary school, which is an elementary school. It's grade prep to six on the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia. The school is Cooma River State School. We have a mixed demographic, but it's mostly middle to low income. We're quite a large school for a primary school. We have over 1,200 students in our school. I'm a classroom teacher. I also do some collegial coaching and one of our school's Indigenous champions.
All right. Well, I'd love to hear more about the Indigenous champion part, Karen. That's something that I would say most North American schools are starting to reckon with, looking at our own history and paying more attention to some of our what we call in Canada, our First Nations people that have been sidelined by histories of colonization. And those are some big topics. But we're going to start with story time. So, Karen, take us back to a low moment or an experience of adversity that you've faced somewhere in your teaching or education career, and then describe how you overcame it.
Okay, so I'm going to go a little bit personal, I suppose, and say disillusionment. So about 2 to 3 years ago, I was feeling discouraged in my career. I'd been teaching for 20 years. During that time, I'd only ever taken 6 months off maternity leave after each of my boys were born before returning to work. I love being a teacher, but there's definitely over that length of time some ups and downs, and I didn't always love my job. I didn't know if I was burnt out, but I did know I needed a break. So I took a term of long service leave, during which time, you know, my focus was rest, relaxation, and rejuvenation. I also did a bit of, you know, reflection on where am I, where do I want to be in my career, and I guess life as well, once you start thinking about those sorts of things. I realized that I was more disillusioned than burnt out. So for now, I've been teaching for 23 years, and in that time, I've seen a lot of changes in the education system, some of them good, but many not so much. Having realized that that's where I was at, I made a conscious decision that I was just going to, when I went back to work, focus my attention on the kids. That was why I became a teacher in the first place. So I really narrowed my focus back to my classroom, what was going on in my classroom. I knew that I was a good teacher, so I chose to put all of my energy back into what I knew what my students needed and what was best for them, whilst still, you know, meeting all the requirements of our role or our job, but they were sort of I sort of put them in the background. The forefront was my students and what my students needed. So once I sort of made that decision, I got really excited about returning to school after my break. While I was on leave, I also had time for professional reading, books that I wanted to read, not books that we get told to read. I discovered the Dave Burgess Consulting Incorporated books. And the first three I read made a huge impact on me. They were Kids Deserve It by Adam Welcome and Todd Nesloney, Teach Like a Pirate by Dave Burgess, and Be Real, Educate from the Heart by Tara Martin. Reading these books and becoming a connected educator changed my career, and I'd even say my life. My passion for being a teacher, as well as my passion for teaching, which to me are actually two different things, was reignited. And I truly feel that without those sparks, my fire for what I do wouldn't be burning as brightly as it is today.
What a great story, Karen. And it's so obvious following you on Twitter that you are on fire today. And I love that idea of pulling back. And, you know, I've heard the story of disillusionment before, but not many teachers can say they've taken that break, that extended leave. One thing I'm curious about was that it doesn't sound like a stress leave or some kind of a long-term disability situation. And that's something that I've seen on this side of the ocean. But okay, I'll just ask, were you paid during that period? Or I'm assuming you went without pay, right?
No, it's paid. So it's long service leave. So I don't know if you guys have long service leave. So when you work for the same employer for a long period of time, you accrue long service leave. So after now it's 7 years, but when I started it was 10 years, you can access your long service leave. So essentially it's you end up with a week per year that you've worked that you can then use in whatever fashion you want and still get paid and still have your job when you go back to work.
Karen, that is remarkable, and I need to be emailing my legislators about that. I love it.
We actually get a lot more entitled. I think our entitlements are a lot better than those of educators in North America.
Wow. You know, I've heard about the idea of a sabbatical. I mean, that's been offered, but it's always been set up as, yeah, you can take a sabbatical, but it'll be sort of you receive whatever you've previously paid into it, if you know what I mean.
I mean, I guess it's not the same exactly, but you know, you do, I suppose you don't pay to go into it, but it's based on period of service. So if you leave an employer prior to, you know, certain periods of time, you don't get that. You don't have access to that.
Right. Right. Interesting. Well, I think it's a great policy for educators. And you know, I think about an article written by John Harper that I just read this morning, and he's an educator that cares a lot about teacher welfare, and he focuses on teacher burnout and has some of that story in his story as well. Mm. And I think how many educators could experience what you've found, you know, that restoration and rejuvenation and just time to read and relax and regain perspective, I think would be so helpful. So I love that in your story. Now, you mentioned Dave Burgess, Karen, and I wanted to ask you about TLAP Down Under, which sounds super fun. So tell us more about TLAP Down Under. It says that you are the founder on your Twitter profile. So is that some kind of an unofficial fan club? Is there a regular chat that happens? Tell us about TLAP Down Under.
Yeah, so it is unofficial. I'm not affiliated with TLAP or DBC Inc. in any way.
Okay.
However, after reading the book, I was really inspired, as I know pretty much everyone else who's ever read the book, and I know I was a bit late to the party. And I started following Dave and the TLAP crew on Twitter. Then last year, during our September school holidays, I was able to join in a couple of the TLAP chats. I really enjoyed them, but with the time difference, obviously, I can't participate regularly because that's the middle of our school day. So I spoke with Dave about starting a chat here, which he was happy for me to do. It started as a book study style chat initially. So to talk about the book, you know, get word out about the book and any other people that were interested in the book or had read the book or hadn't read the book but wanted to know more about the book. And once that was finished, people were really, really enjoying joining in. So I kept it going. We don't just have Australians actually joining in the chat. I probably have more international participants than I do Australian participants. We have regular people who join in from New Zealand, Japan, China, Singapore, the UAE, Switzerland, Germany, the UK.
Wow.
Because the time suits them as well. it's a time that they can fit into their day, because again, I guess with the time difference with North America, the chat that I do is more accessible for them. So I'm truly grateful to Dave for his encouragement and support with that, and to all other the DBC Inc. authors who support the chat as well. And it's on Sundays. Here it's 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, but it's just with your daylight saving now. It's actually just being on the East Coast anyway. It's now 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning. So we're also getting some Americans, Canadians joining in as well, because like if they're up early on a Sunday morning, they jump on in too.
That is so cool. Now, I have to tell you, I'm in the Pacific Standard Time Zone, and that makes it 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Yeah. So I probably I probably won't see you live there, Karen, but I know you've got to find a time that works for your region, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, a couple of times when we first started, when there wasn't the daylight saving or things like that, you know, it was 1 a.m. Your time. And Dave would jump in every now and then and say hi, but he doesn't often. Obviously, it's just not a very friendly time.
Well, you know, the nice thing about Twitter chats is I know you've taken advantage of is that the tweets stay there, you know, and you can continue to read and respond to them even days after. And for a long time, I thought, oh, that's kind of a no-no. You're not allowed to do that if you weren't part of the chat. But it turns out that Twitter is a pretty free place. So if you do happen upon the TLAP down under hashtag, or if you're on your computer as you're listening to this, check it out and see what kind of value bombs the crew that Karen has been putting together are putting out there. Now, Karen, moving to the classroom, you and I both use a program called Seesaw to help curate, represent, and share our students' learning. We know that Seesaw is just one of several great platforms in this space, but as a Seesaw ambassador yourself, tell us what you love about the platform.
So we use it in a variety of ways, but one of the ways we use it is a digital portfolio to collect evidence of students' learning. So it's really accessible to everyone. Then I can just bring my iPad home and do some marking rather than having to carry all the books, which makes it, they usually just go for a drive in my car anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But having that, and then also having that collection of work there, that body of work that you can always refer back to. If students have done, you know, not so great on an assessment task, but you can look back through their Seesaw portfolio, then you can see, well, you know, most of the time they've been doing quite well. So you sort of don't have to rely on that one piece of assessment. The other great thing is obviously sharing with families. Families can see. So we have a class Seesaw and then we have the evidence of learning Seesaw. So the class Seesaw is just, you know, lots of things that we do throughout the day. So the parents can see all of those things that their children are doing. They can have conversations with them. They can comment on them. So it keeps them updated and in the loop with what their children are learning. And the other thing we use it a lot for is feedback. So feedback to students, but also students giving each other feedback as well.
That is so interesting. I knew I was going to learn something chatting with you about Seesaw. So do you put evaluative statements and feedback right on Seesaw? Like, can parents see the feedback and assessment that you're giving students?
Yes, they can see it. Generally, the feedback I give them is more that tickled pink, green for growth.
Okay.
Feedback. We don't put grades or anything like that on the work.
Right.
There's a separate marking sheet for that.
Sure. And that was actually my next question. Are you gradeless or are you still giving letter grades and percentages there? And probably not percentages, right? But how are you?
No.
You know, what's your grading system at your school?
We still do grades, A to E, five-point scale. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I love it. I wanted to ask you too, is there a favorite Seesaw activity that you've done recently that you could tell us about?
So at the start of the year, we used Seesaw to do some real you snaps from so Tara Martin with her book snaps. She also has the real you snaps.
Right.
So it was a way of we had a focus in the first week of school of Know Me Before You Teach Me, which was all about getting to know our students and developing relationships with them. We were able to put the curriculum on hold for that week and focus solely on getting to know our students and building relationships, with which was amazing. One of the activities I did with that were the Real You Snaps. So students really engage with that. Obviously, it's a selfie. You know, they use the text box. They can add emojis and images and all sorts of things. And it was just like that sharing about themselves. We've also used this term, book snaps. We've just started looking at the book snaps and using Seesaw for vocab snaps as well.
So much fun. You're getting me thinking about using or doing more with book snaps. Do your children have iPads, or how are they doing all the snaps?
Yeah, we're a one-to-one iPad school.
Ah, okay.
Bring your own device, iPad.
Yeah. I'm in eighth grade, and I'm a BYOD laptop situation. So taking pictures is a little more difficult, as you know, and screenshots, obviously, but it is possible.
I'm sure that they can figure it out. they're pretty tech savvy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's all a lot of fun, Karen. I really appreciate the ideas and inspiration already. Let's move on to some other things. What else excites you about education today? I've pestered you a lot here about Seesaw, but what else is igniting your fire in the classroom?
So I guess two things, but I've combined them, which is reading and global connections. So I'm really passionate about, getting my students reading, getting the joy back in reading for pleasure, developing lifelong readers. So focusing a lot on that. One way that we've incorporated the global connections with that was last year. Well, she's actually still writing it, but I have a new group of students, so I can't continue to participate. But Alison Apsey is writing like a youth fiction book, The Serendipity Journal. And so each week she puts out a chapter for the book, and she has students edit the chapter for her. She provides a set of questions, which it's as well as an editing task, it's really a reading comprehension task. She asks them, about the characters, or about, are there words that they're not sure of, does she need to make any changes, did they understand, what's happening, was she descriptive enough? So all of those types of questions. So we did that for a term, and they loved that. They were then also able to, this year we had, and I had those kids come back for this. Alison, we Google Hangout with her, and she read The Princes of Serendip, and the children were able to speak to her about the Serendipity Journal and how she was going with writing. Through that process, we also connected with Alicia Ray, who her class and my class set up a Padlet, where they did some introductions and then were asking each other questions about the book, but also about their school, where they live, what they like to do on the weekends, the differences between where we are and where they are, because they're in North Carolina, rural North Carolina. And then this year I did a kindness read aloud, which was inspired by Annick Broke's mindset read aloud. We weren't able to join in that because we weren't back at school, but I thought it was such an amazing idea, so I facilitated a kindness read aloud, which went for 4 weeks in February. So we made lots of global connections through that as well.
Yes, and we heard about some of that awesomeness from Annick a couple of episodes back. Wow, you are incredibly connected, Karen, and I love hearing each of those different examples. Now, on the read-alouds, are you putting those on YouTube or Facebook Live, or how are you sharing that out?
So they are on YouTube, the actual read-aloud, and then I would blog each week with the questions.
I see.
So there'd be slides that had the questions and the link to the YouTube account, and shared it on Twitter. We had three classes from my school or my grade level also participate, and two of them did one of the books for the week. 1 week, Ramona Mahag did one of the other books with her high school students, and Alicia did one of the other books for us as well.
Awesome stuff. And of course, Alicia Ray is a legend. She's an insane reader, right? And
yes.
really sets the bar for the rest of us, I think. So Karen, you took the time away, you regained your perspective, your passion was reignited, you got into some of the DBC books, and you're seeing education, or you've been seeing it since that time in a whole different light. Can you share about a specific professional goal or an area that you're working on for this year?
Yeah, sure. So I guess back to my school and my students, looking at developing a school reading community. So I worked really hard last year on developing a class reading community, making sure that, you know, there was time for independent reading. Students were able to choose books of their own choice. As I mentioned earlier, trying to get kids excited about reading again. I really felt we'd gotten to the stage where, you know, every time they picked up a book, they were being told what book to read. It was all instructional. You know, you're learning this while we're reading this. And it just sucked all the joy out of reading. As someone who really enjoys reading, that made me really sad because the kids just, they were like, I don't want to read, because they didn't see it as fun. So I worked hard on that. And then I've been able to then, I guess, influence the school with that as well. I was able to share, you know, what I did with in my class, how I set up my classroom library, how I found time in the timetable for students to be able to do independent reading. Shared that with the staff, and then pretty much straight away we saw an increase in, you know, teachers borrowing books for their classroom library from the library, because we just had books sitting on shelves. Kids weren't borrowing them, even though they were going, you know, to the library for borrowing time. So they've had, you know, their students having a say in what books they want to read, what books they want available in the classroom. They've, you know, found time for students to be reading on a regular basis in their classrooms as well. So we've really seen an increase in kids wanting to read again. There was even a boy in my class, you know, I don't know when the last time he chose to pick up a book. And one morning last year, the reason so many people noticed is because he was in a place he wasn't meant to be. However, he'd gone to sit in this spot that was quiet. It was before school, before the bell had rung. You know, and there was like three teachers asked him what he was doing. And he's like, well, it's really noisy where everyone else is supposed to be, is where we're meant to be sitting. And I just want this time to read my book. I really just want it to be quiet so I can read my book. And that was a child that, look, I don't think anyone could tell you the last time he picked up a book and wanted to read a book and chose to read a book.
Awesome.
So, I mean, you know, take away that he was somewhere he wasn't meant to be. Focus on that, like, it was just purely because he just really wanted to be able to focus and read and enjoy the book that he was reading.
I think sometimes as educators, Karen, we feel almost a sense of guilt about reading and independent reading if it's not followed up by something, you know, some kind of a written or reflective product. But I think you're right that we have to think really carefully about, you know, how we're approaching literacy and doing it in a way that doesn't squeeze the joy completely out of reading. And you spoke to that. One book that I would shout out on that note is called Sparks in the Dark by Travis Crowder and Todd Nasloney. And
yep, I've read that one.
Oh, wasn't it good?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So many gems. And I've been sharing them and sort of gradually tweeting out some of my favorite quotes from that one. But in terms of building a positive reading culture in your school and just breathing life into that joy of reading, that's a book to check out for sure.
Yeah, and I think where I'm sort of heading next, I suppose, now is the writing side of it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we're starting to make way with the reading and, you know, recognizing the value in student choice in reading and independent reading, because that's the time they practice all those skills that you teach them. I mean, if you're not giving them that time to read, well, they're not practicing those skills. But now it's the writing. We're still very prescriptive in what we want children to write about. And how we want them to write it. So I guess that's in my mind. That's the sort of next thing I want to tackle, I guess, in how can we get the same type of feeling or the same, provide the same opportunities with student writing as what we are currently doing with the reading.
And it's a constant tension for us as English teachers, right, Karen? We have to rein in that instinct to sort of pepper the student writing with edits on form, style, and mechanics, and sometimes just let them write for meaning. And that's something that I guess it's always kind of in a state of tension for every English teacher, but that's something I've definitely evolved in as my career has progressed. And, you know, putting a little bit less emphasis on the clinical analysis and just encouraging kids to write. I mean, once again, helping them just find that joy of, as, and I'm going to forget where this quote comes from, but writing to find out what we think. Okay, I'm murdering the quote, but just writing in a way that helps us understand ourselves is what I'm trying to express. And I think often, just like reading, we can potentially squeeze the joy out of that writing process.
Yeah.
Karen, outside of education, what's another area of learning for you? What is it that ignites your passions outside of the classroom and really brings you alive as a human being?
Reading, obviously. Yeah. But I've also recently started writing, and I found that I'm really enjoying that.
Cool.
Probably November last year I started writing. So it's fairly new, but it's something that I'm really enjoying, and is really, you know, something that I'm learning to do and trying to make better. And then travel, I suppose that sort of fits with the global connections as well. Really enjoy traveling when we save up and can afford it, because we're so far away.
So what's next on your travel list?
We're actually coming back to, not you're in Canada, but we're going back to America at the end of the year. When I took that long service leave, part of that time we traveled around, we spent 2 weeks driving around Tennessee. So we're going back over again for three weeks, I think, in December. And this time we're back in Nashville, Gatlinburg, Charleston, Savannah, Asheville, and Atlanta.
Well, very fun. A lot of cities I have visited. I once had my car fixed in Savannah, and my sister-in-law is from Chattanooga, Tennessee, so I know some of that area pretty well.
Yeah, we went to Chattanooga last time. So that means heaps of places we'd like to go back to, but it's time and money.
Absolutely, yeah. Teacher salary, right? Moving on, so you're one of these ultra productive educators, or at least that's the appearance, Karen. Maybe there's more to the story, but share about a personal habit or some kind of a productivity hack that really allows you to get it all done.
Well, no, I'm really not.
Okay.
I guess I'm organized, but I don't have any, you know, I don't feel I have good personal habits when it comes to things like that. I think the main thing for me is routine. When I get out of routine, then things tend to fall apart. So I'm fairly particular about staying within a routine, even things like exercise. So once I don't go for a few days, go to the gym or, you know, I was CrossFitting. If I don't go for a few days, that turns into a week, which turns into 2 weeks. And because it just slips out of routine, and then the longer you don't do it, it's like, you know, it's more of that effort to go back.
Right.
So I feel that I guess routine is important. Otherwise, I can easily procrastinate. I will, you know, I'll find something else to do instead of what I want, instead of what I need to do.
Right. Okay, makes sense. Thanks, Karen.
Sorry, I can't really give anyone any advice there.
No apps or magic formulas. Okay, that's totally fine. That makes a lot of sense, and I think a lot of our audience can relate with that. So, Karen, it's time for your quick picks, and here we want to know about the education voices and resources that are shaping your practice and inspiring your thinking. So, starting at Twitter, tell us about someone we should follow there and share why they've been inspiring you lately.
Okay, so Catherine Williams, she's an educator from New South Wales. She does an amazing Welcome to Wednesday every Wednesday morning, where she dresses up, stands out in front of the school with motivating messages for her students or for the students of the school as they enter the classroom. So she's awesome the way she does all of that. And the other one I have to quickly give a shout out to is Tamara Letta, with obviously her book, A Passion for Kindness, and her spreading the word and inspiring people to be more kind, because we can't have too much of that.
Absolutely. Point us to an ed tech tool that you currently love using in your classroom or in your professional practice.
There's so many Keynote with all of their new features that they're bringing out. I'm really not that tech savvy when it comes to those types of things. So I'm looking forward to incorporating that a lot more with my students. They'll probably end up being the ones teaching me how to use all of those new features, but I'm really looking forward to exploring that a bit more.
And that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned that you are an iPad classroom, so Keynote. And I heard on a recent podcast that Keynote is really a great option if you're looking to make those graphics that we see on Twitter sometimes or elsewhere. Keynote is good for more than just slideshows, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's heaps more to it than that.
Mm-hmm. Next, recommend a book, one that you've been reading lately, Karen, and you mentioned you love reading, so look forward to this, or maybe one of your all-time faves, and tell us why you recommend it.
Okay, so besides almost every DBC Inc. book that I've read, my favorite one out of all those would probably be the original, Teach Like a Pirate, but I'm currently reading a book by an Australian author called Jane Harper. It's her new book called The Lost Man. It's a crime thriller set in the outback. So that's really interesting.
Ooh, love it. And are you a podcast listener? If you are, tell us what you've got in your deck and maybe why we should add it to ours.
Okay, so I love listening to the In Awe podcasts by Sarah Johnson, who is co-author of the Balance Like a Pirate book. But she started this new In Awe community. Part of that is the podcasts. So the focus is amplifying women and sharing their inspiring stories. Each month she has a focus or a theme for the guests that she speaks with. So far she's had resilience, new beginnings, advocacy, and community building.
So cool. And a former guest on Teachers on Fire. I listened to her last episode with Ray Hewitt and just inspiring stuff. So I'm going to second that one. Tell us about a YouTube channel that you've tuned in to once in a while, Karen, and one that we can subscribe to.
I don't really watch YouTube much.
What?
No. Okay. Just one more thing that would probably, I just don't know if I could fit it in.
Sure, yeah.
Time-wise, that's sort of, I know that it'd probably be amazing. But I do like the John Spencer videos. You know, they have different purposes. They're great for that personal learning aspect, as well as ones that you can use in the classroom with students.
Okay. And then just for fun, last question, strictly non-educational. Karen, what are you watching on Netflix right now?
So I've enjoyed the Jack Whitehall Travels with My Father series. So he's a comedian and he travels with his father. And they're very different personality types. So that's quite interesting. But if you're looking for, I guess, a funny, I don't know if you guys would have it over there, but an Australian show is Upper Middle Bogan.
Okay.
And it's you know, it's a little bit stereotypical, but it's pretty entertaining in the way it looks at, you know, how Australians are viewed, I guess. Okay. But as I said, I don't know if you guys would have it over there. It follows a family. And Bogan is, you heard of the word Bogan?
No.
I guess it's not really an exact fit, but the closest I could come to would be like a redneck, I guess. Oh, okay,
sure.
It's not exactly that, but it's that type of thing.
Okay. Well, it sounds like uniquely Australian humor, and it makes me really curious. And I'll tell you what, when I type up the show notes for this episode, Karen, I will make sure to check that out on Netflix and take a look, and I'll add it to my list. Okay. If it's available to us North American viewers, Karen, I've been looking forward to this so much, and you were better than advertised. Thank you so much for connecting with me despite the 17-hour difference in time zones. What are the best ways for the listeners to follow you and find out more about TLAP Down Under?
Okay, so my Twitter, which you mentioned earlier, it's at KACW1. There's my blog where I write, I write about some of the books that I've read, some things I do in class. A lot of my writing is quite reflective. So it's about my experiences, the challenges I face, having had depression and anxiety. So some of it is based around that. And I think it's really important to raise that awareness and to try to remove the stigma around mental health. So that's what some of my writing is about, pretty reflective in that sense. And then I'm also on Instagram at Mrs. C_teaching_passionately.
Okay, Karen. Well, I will make sure to get all of that, like I said, onto the show notes there at teachersonfire.net. But thank you again for sharing your time today. It's been really fun to connect with another one of my overseas PLN connections. And I want to thank you for your transparency as well. It's been great to connect and learn a little bit more about Seesaw and a few other things going on in your practice. So take care, Karen, and let's talk again soon.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for joining me here today on the Teachers on Fire podcast. For show notes and links from this episode, visit teachersonfire.net. You can also follow the show at Teachers on Fire on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Medium. And again, please do subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Tim Cavey, saying goodbye for now, and we'll catch you next time right here on the Teachers on Fire podcast.